As was the case this morning, we have some visitors with us tonight. Please know that we're so glad that you're here with us. And I would say you're always welcome here, but that's not the case. But you will be welcome over there. And so look forward to seeing many of you as the weeks and months progress over at what is now 29th, and this time next week will be the Midtown Church of Christ. If you would be turning to Matthew chapter 7 with me, and we'll begin reading in just a moment at verse number 24. Matthew chapter 7, beginning at verse number 24. Now, I think I heard correctly, and if I did, I'm restating one of the announcements. And correct me if I'm wrong, Dennis, but what you were saying was that anything that you'd like to take from this building, wait one more week.
Correct.
And so, okay.
And that's just something that's already been earmarked for you to take.
Exactly, okay.
Yeah.
But just don't come in willy-nilly.
Correct.
Forgive my technical language there. And take something until the week following. Okay. I need to bring back all my... booty. My books are taken care of. Thank you very much, Marquita. Matthew chapter 7, beginning at verse 24. Jesus says, "Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock, and the rain descended, and floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it fell, and great was its fall." And so it was, when Jesus had ended these sayings, that the people were astonished at his teaching, for he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. This story that Jesus tells in parable fashion is one that the kids in Vacation Bible School sing. They love to sing the song about the wise man, the foolish man, and one house stood, the other house came crashing down, and they enjoy making loud noises when the house comes crashing down. And as I've mentioned before, sometimes as much as we enjoy the song itself does not really bring out the purpose of the parable. In the song, we sing, "So build your house on the Lord Jesus Christ," which, by the way, I'm all in favor of. But the point Jesus is making is not just building on him, but doing what you know, doing what you've heard, putting what you know into practice. The one who builds house on the sand is one who hears, he knows, but he has decided for whatever reason to do nothing with his knowledge. He's not building a life by doing what Jesus has taught. He's stopping with just the hearing of it. And the individual who's built his house on the rock, whose house can withstand the storms, as it were, of life and tribulation and turmoil, this person is the one who hears what Jesus has said and goes beyond just the hearing of the words. This person actually puts into practice those things he has taken in. He's changed his life by doing what Jesus said do. Jesus taught about the need for us to have ears to hear, and taught of the wonders of our having understanding of what he's saying. But the premium of everything Jesus says rests upon the doing of what we know. Unlike the scribes and Pharisees of Jesus' day, who loved to talk and pontificate and try to argue amongst themselves about which laws were the best and which laws meant what, Jesus cut through all the fat, as it were, of the language and got to the meat of the matter of what it means to live these truths. And in so many of Jesus' parables, it goes beyond just knowing and hearing to the actual rubber meet the road type situation of doing. The bottom line of New Testament teaching is it's all about what we choose to do, not just what we know. Now, later on, James, the brother of Jesus, will say in the first chapter of the book bearing his name that there's an unusual situation between just knowing, just hearing the Word of God and doing it. In the sense that if we hear it and know it and don't do it, we're like a person beholding his face in a mirror or a glass. Sees himself, goes his way, forgets what manner of man he is. But the person that does the work, who does the word, who does these things, is the individual who's involved in the pure religion that the last verse of that first chapter speaks of. Again, it's all about the doing. And so with that in mind, I thought we might spend just a moment this evening talking about some positive things we can do going forward to make the next little while, hopefully the next long while, a tremendous resounding success. Number one, what can we do? It's interesting that all these things I'm going to mention, and I say all of them, they're just three, I think. But all of them take almost no effort. You know, there's one thing to work and work hard, something else to work hard by doing almost nothing. And these things don't take that much of your effort. Number one, what can I do? I can be an encourager, like Barnabas. Remember his story in the book of Acts? When others in the congregation at Jerusalem were selling their possessions, selling their homes, selling their lands, and giving the money at the apostles' feet to help those poor who were in such need at the time. Barnabas did that. But his name is singled out because beyond just the giving of what he had, he was such an encourager, such an exhorter, that the apostles changed his name from Joseph or Joses to Barnabas, which means son of encouragement. And he proves by the rest of so much of his life what an encourager he was. When Saul of Tarsus becomes Saul the convert, and soon Paul the preacher, at the very first, when the disciples of Damascus did not want to receive Saul, because after all, he had done such damage to their families, their livelihoods, his reputation preceded him. What did Barnabas do? He encouraged them to stand up for Saul and give him an opportunity because now he's a Christian like we are. He was an encourager. That's just the kind of person Barnabas was. When Barnabas went out with Saul in the first missionary journey, they took one of Barnabas' relatives, John Mark, with them. And for reasons we don't know, John Mark turned back. Went back home during the first mission. And when Barnabas and Saul go out the second time for the second journey, now they're known as Paul and Barnabas. Barnabas wants to give John Mark a second opportunity. And Paul will have none of it. And they have a great dissension between them on that matter and end up going their separate ways because of it. After all is said and done and the years of life clear, in the rearview mirror, I'm sure Paul would say, I think Barnabas was right on that one, because he speaks highly of John Mark in the years to come. But the one at the time that was speaking in favor of giving John Mark chance number two, it was the great encourager Barnabas. We need to be edifying, encouraging, and uplifting in our language with one another concerning what we're going through. We don't need defeatist attitudes. Oh, this isn't going to work. We don't need negative attitudes. Well, other people tried things like this. Didn't work for them. We need to be positive, optimistic, and edifying of one another. Encouraging one another. If you see somebody doing good work, encourage them. Say something to them that will edify them and push them forward to do even more. We have enough naysayers in the world. We have enough devil's advocates even in the church. We need more encouragers, more people that with their language will get behind and speak words of edification and positive encouragement to those doing their best to do what's right. Be an encourager. And you know what? It doesn't take you a penny to do it. It doesn't take a great vocabulary to do it. It doesn't take that much time to do it. All it takes is a moment to tell somebody, appreciate the good work you're doing, keep it up. This thing's going to work and we're going to make it work. Words of encouragement. And that's one thing you can do. Number two, when all is said and done, this is more about just than getting two groups together and being on the same page. It's about long-term and even short-term bringing souls into the kingdom. That's what it's all about. And one thing we have opportunity to do short-term that won't last forever, but we have opportunity to invite people to something new. Now, you and I know not that much is changing. We're not changing our principles. We're not changing our policies of what's right and wrong. We're not changing our views of Scripture. We're still the Church of Christ as Jesus founded her. But from the outsiders looking in, they see something new happening. There's a building. It's got a brand new name. And there seems to be a brand new spirit of activity and optimism. People respond to the newness of something like that, and there's a shelf life to it. Ever notice when somebody's building a new restaurant, and when it's first built, you can't get in the parking lot because everybody wants to go. You wait a few years and you have plenty of parking spots. But at first, everybody wants to go because it's new. It's brand new. We've got a Ted's being built out not too far from our house. I can hardly wait until enough time goes by that I can get there without having to fight the crowds. I think it was Yogi Berra that said of one restaurant, it's so popular that nobody goes anymore because it's too crowded. Well, the fact is, the newness of a thing brings people in. Well, it doesn't take that much of your time to just go to a friend you know, someone you work with, someone who's across the way as a neighbor, someone you're in a social group with, and say, you know, we're part of a brand new congregation. We'd love for you to come and visit one of our services. Now, what money does that cost? Not a penny. What effort do you have to do that? Hardly any effort's required. What if they don't come? Well, what if they don't come? All you've done is invite somebody to come to a worship service. And who knows, they might not come to that one. They might come to one a little bit later. It's never wrong to do a right thing. And it's always right to invite somebody to come to where the gospel is preached, to where gospel songs are sung, to where edifying prayers are lifted up, to where you find people actually doing their best to worship a God as one people. It's always good to invite people to a service like that. Hopefully we'll have services that will encourage people to want to come back. But the second thing we can do is get out about the business of inviting people to come and be a part of what we have going on. Because when all is said and done, now, stay with me just a second. I'm going to get negative for a moment, and I'll get positive real quick. The church has lost a couple of generations, by and large. And it's apparent in congregations across the country. You find entire swaths of this country with congregations that have hair that's gray or like mine, let loose, and you say, where are the young people? Well, there's a few, but not as many as you'd think. Not as many as we're producing. What happened? Well, that's a whole different subject. What I'm saying is, if we're going to build the Lord's church back, it's not just with populating it with our genes, reproducing. is going to be us going out in the byways and the hedges as the gospel was meant to be taken to people who don't have the gospel and bringing them in, winning souls back to Jesus again. That's what it's all about. And it's good to teach a Bible study. It's good to convert your neighbor. It's good to baptize a friend. But all of us can do one thing. We can invite those we know to places where the gospel is preached. And as the preacher, I can promise you, I'll preach the gospel. And you won't be able to come to many of our services, if even more than one, and leave not knowing what the Lord expects of you to become a Christian and how the Lord wants you to become a Christian. Number three, and this one, I wouldn't have been saying this just a very short time ago. This one just takes a second and a finger. I'd like to say, forget this technology business. I have nothing to do with it. But technology is not going away. And for all the bad you can say about it and all the disgusting things that might happen because of it, there are a number of wonderful things technology can do. Now, over in the building there, they actually videotape and live stream their Sunday morning services. And I was curious, and so I went in after last week's service and checked. And did you know since last Sunday till today, just before I came, I checked again, 125 people have viewed that service. That's more people than were in the service by a pretty good number. Which tells me that we can even build on that. I've talked to Derek, and we're going to find a way to the service is wonderful for those who can't be there, but for those later who want to see just the lesson part, the sermon part, the Bible part, we can excise that out from the whole service and have a separate part of YouTube for that, catalog them by titles. And you say, well, what does that mean to me? I'll tell you what it means to you. How hard is it to go on there and you see something that you like? You push the button. You like it. Or it's meant something to you. It's changed your life or changed your thinking. You go even one step further and you share that on your social platforms. I didn't even talk like this not long ago. Social platforms. Who ever heard of such? But the world is being turned upside down that way. The devil's using these platforms. It's about time we started. He presents his lies and his deception. He presents his filth and his garbage. We might as well put the gospel out there. And the wonderful thing about it is kind of like inviting somebody to church. You don't have to come up with your own lesson. Just push like and share, and it's amazing if we all do it, how things will begin to spread and build on themselves. And whether it helps the congregation at Midtown short term or not, it should help. It will help the cause of Christ, short term and long term. Now, there are three things that we can do. Don't take any effort. Not much energy at all, not a cent of money. We can be encouraging, we can invite people we know, and we can go online and push the button. And that one's the easiest of all. 1 second, one finger, what you can do. If all of us with 1 second and one finger got to it, what good we could do. By multiplying the message and sharing the gospel. 1 second, one finger. Now, what does that have to do with what Jesus is saying here? Well, just this. It's one thing to know it and another to do it. Well, we need to encourage. Now, I know, brother so-and-so or sister so-and-so, they need to be better encouragers. Boy, they're bad at it. And, no, we need to do it ourselves. Encourage. In fact, talking like that is the opposite of encouragement. We ought to invite people. I know we should. I've seen the studies. I've read the demographics. I know the downfall of some of these things. I know the way it works, but, well, have you ever tried doing it? Well, no, I'm too busy thinking about it. I'm too busy running the graphs and studies about the matter. Just do it. All these things are things that require us to go past just knowing and hearing to actually doing. Now, two last things before we close out this lesson. First of all, let's just jump to number two. One thing I'd like to say at the end of this lesson, and that is, I got to thinking several minutes ago that really the time for this lesson is not tonight. It's next Sunday evening. And so those of you who are here tonight, there's some, don't know, Marquita. She said, don't come next week. No. You need to all be there next Sunday evening and pretend like some version of this as something you've never heard before. Because I think we'll do something along this same line next Sunday evening. Because I think these are points that are good for all of us to keep in mind as we try to build something going forward. The first thing I wasn't going to mention, and I'm not, so I won't, but I will. It goes to encouragement. We're going to begin Sunday evening services over there. Listen carefully. I'm talking to our people. Be careful the way you talk to them about that subject. Don't treat them like some kind of spiritual pariah. Like some kind of outcast that's left the fold and needs to be voted off the island. Let's start from square one, move forward, and encourage them. And there'll be some that need to get back in the habit of coming. The way to get people to coming is not to blame them or to shame them, but to encourage them. It's kind of like, remember when Nathaniel heard about Jesus and said, can any good thing come out of Israel? And what was he told? Well, come and see. Come and see. Those that may not be in the habit of coming on Sunday evening, well, just come and see. Be an encourager. And be careful not to be a discourager by the way you frame things and the way you invite those who do need to come. And we all need to be a part of this. The more we do together and the more encouraging we are in the process, the more hope of success we have. Not for us. Success for God's cause, for the kingdom here in Tulsa, for the good we hope we can do, for His will to be done. Again, pretend next week like you haven't heard this. And knowing me, you'll probably hear it and say, that's nothing like that. I don't see any similarity. And that may be true too. In which case, forget this last. If you're here with us tonight and you're outside of Christ, think about changing that even tonight by obeying the gospel. But as a Christian, if your life has gone astray from what you need to be doing, if you have been knowing and hearing but not doing, and you need to come back and make your life right with God by repenting, asking His forgiveness and help, if you need to come, come now as together we stand and sing.